Hare Krishna. I've been asked a question about understanding what are the proper dates for observance of Ekadashi. You may know that in the early days of ISKCON, actually up till about 1990, all over the world, Ekadashi was observed by devotees in ISKCON, according to the dates given in the Navadvip Dham Panjika, which means the calendar, almanac, that's the right word, produced in Bengali from Sri Chaitanya Math in Mayapur, which gives the dates of Ekadashis and appearance days, disappearance days of acharyas, and so on. And apparently, at one point, Pradyumna Prabhu, who was Srila Prabhupada's traveling Sanskrit assistant, who Srila Prabhupada affectionately referred to as Panditji, American devotee who had learned Sanskrit, and in the course of traveling with Srila Prabhupada and in the course of his studies, had understood many of the details of the vast Vedic and Vaishnava culture that at that time devotees, the great majority of devotees, had absolutely no idea of whatsoever. So apparently, and I wasn't able to find anything in the Veda base with a short search, but it's been in my knowledge or consciousness for many years. Apparently at some point Pradyumna Prabhu suggested to Srila Prabhupada that we should calculate the proper date for observing Ekadashi in each specific place, because it's not the same everywhere. And Srila Prabhupada had refused that and said, let's just keep things simple. Now, how is it that Ekadashi can be observed in different days in different places? Well, it's because the Vaishnava calendar and many calendars in use in India today, they're actually not just the Gregorian calendar that is pretty much standard for most of the world, but there are other calendars in use also to the present day. The Chinese calendar is still used in China. The, can't remember the name, the Muslims, they use one also, which means it's a lunar calendar, which means it doesn't run exactly in correspondence with the Gregorian calendar, and that's why Ramadan, the month of Ramadan, and every other date in the Muslim calendar, it comes a little bit different time every year. So a lunar calendar, what we call a lunar calendar, it means that every day, what we call a day, when is it in the Gregorian or the present system, it's from midnight to midnight. And then in other calendars you calculate from sunrise to sunrise is one day. That's a solar day. If it's sunrise to sunrise, it's going to be different lengths of time. You may have a very short day or a very long day, depending on the time of year. So that's been fixed up in the Gregorian system by making it midnight to midnight. Although really the day begins in our, or the natural way we would think is it begins at sunrise. And that's generally there for the Vedic system. Now it's very complex, what we call a lunar calendar, because it depends on the movements of the moon, which are not in sync with the movements of the sun, but every day of the lunar calendar, it's given as a day according to the how do I explain this? According to the solar calendar, but it's fixed according to the movements. You could say it's a calendar that combines the movements of the sun and the moon. So we, in 1 month, according to the Vaishnava calendar, oh, I was saying there are many calendars in India also. Yeah, there's the Bangabda, the Bengali calendar. Then there are different colors. In North India, in Kerala, they have their own calendar. There are different calendars running on, and they're mostly all these what are called lunar calendars, where they're actually, it's actually lunar cum solar. So the month is divided into two parts, which is the Gaura Paksha, we call, we call it that in Bhagavad Gita because we're devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or otherwise, it's usually called the Shukla Paksha. You will find these terms in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Shukla Paksha means the bright months, and that means when the moon is waxing. And then there's the Krishna Paksha. Paksha means 2 weeks. And the two-week Krishna Paksha here, Krishna means black or dark, the dark 2 weeks in which the moon is waning. And these two pakshas together make 1 month. So the names are there. There's Pratipat means the first day, then Dvitiya, Tritiya, Chaturthi. These are the names of the months, which means simply first, second, third, fourth, fifth. But because of the movements of the moon and the sun are not, they're not exactly in sync. In one paksha, sometimes we have two dvitiyas or two ekadashis. Ekadashi means the 11th day. Chaturthi, Panchami, Shashti, Saptami, Ashtami, Navami, Dashami, Ekadashi, Dwadashi, Trayodashi, Chaturdashi. And after, so these are the 14 days, and then the 15th day will either be Amavasya in the dark fortnight, or the Purnima in the bright fortnight. And then after the fortnight, after the Purnima, then the new, that's the last day of the month, and then the new month will begin on the day after that. But because sometimes the moon, the actual time when the moon rises and sets can be very short and can be very long, and so sometimes you get two Ekadashis and no Dashami or something, it becomes like that. So it's all very intricate, and it'll be different in different places, just like the sun rises at different times in different places all over the world. So and therefore Monday in San Francisco will begin at a different time to Monday in New York. And then it becomes more complex when we have the movements of the moon also. So that's why it may be in one place that you have two Ekadashis in one paksha, in one fortnight, and another place you don't. Or it may be that the Ekadashi is on a different day in one place and it is another place because of the movements are not the same in every place. And so it does happen. Say if you are in San Francisco, it's going to happen probably at least 2 times a year, if not more, that the date of Ekadashi or Janmashtami or any other event is going to be different to that in Mayapur. And so to say, well, we're going to follow, today is Ekadashi, we may say. But it's a bit like, it's a little bit like insisting that if today is Tuesday and you insist, no, today is Wednesday, And how do you know it's Wednesday? Well, it's if you're sitting in India and you say today is Wednesday. You say today is Wednesday, and someone else says no, it's Tuesday. Well, it is Tuesday, maybe in San Francisco or further west, but it's not true there. So if you say it's Tuesday, if you're sitting in Mayapur, that might be true if you were in or just to the east of the international date line. That might be true. But actually in Mayapur it's Wednesday. So it sounds absurd to say it's Tuesday when you're in Mayapur, when actually it's Wednesday. So these are the kind of things that are going on if you don't calculate it exactly according to the place. So then when Pradyumna Prabhu proposed that, because it's a very strict thing to follow Ekadashi, there are stated in Shastra all kinds of horrible things that happen if you don't follow Ekadashi, then you go to hell if you eat grains on Ekadashi. On the other hand, if you do follow Ekadashi properly, then you are enriched with love of Krishna. So it's a very serious thing. And also the correct time for breaking the fast the day afterward, we know in the narration of Ambarish Maharaj, what an important thing that was for him to break fast at the proper time. So these are all very technical details. And who can calculate these things? Well, previously, these calendars were calculated by professional astrologers. And they were, according to the movements of the planets, they would make calculations. Just like you can calculate in advance when there's going to be a lunar eclipse. How can you calculate in advance? How do you know? Well, by observing the movements of the sun and the moon and the earth, you can calculate. But it's a very specialized science. Now, it's not that the astrologers, they would individually all look at the planets, and then in this way they will calculate what are the dates of Ekadashi. When does it begin? When does it end? When do we have to break the fast? They would use tables with astronomical constants. Astronomical constants means that you can understand from these what time the sun will rise at a certain place. It's all calculated for you in advance. So that's very helpful. But still, you have to do a lot of calculation. Now, you have to know what you're doing and do a lot of calculation. Now, a problem with astronomical constants is that they're not exceedingly constant, because by observing the movements of the rotations of the planets, you can make prediction, and it's going to be the same pretty much over a few years, but it's not that constant, so it changes over a century or two centuries. The movements of the planets, it's going to be tangential, so that the tables that you use are no longer very accurate. So that's another problem. The constants have to be revised every so often. This was a point that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati took up in a debate when he was a young man. He was. It's well known that prior to his becoming a full-time propagator of Krishna consciousness, that he was a brilliant astrologer. Well, that's true, but actually he was more of an astronomer. And in Vedic culture, the same word is used, and the two are completely intermixed. Astrology depends on astronomy, and astronomy depends on observation and mathematics. Now, in Indian culture, there was in the previously until modern science and the Western outlook became so influential, there was a very strong part of the culture was that you purvaya purvataram kritam. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about following the ancients. You should do what the previous people did. So we should follow what the old people did. So due to some improper understanding, it was going on in India among Bengali astronomers or astrologers at least, that they insisted on using astronomical constants that are actually out of date, which means that many of their calculations, they would be wrong. So this becomes all quite problematic. And even up to the present day, we find that different, if you find different almanacs are put out by different groups, you know, every year in Bengal there's an almanac put out, and it used to be that every Hindu household would purchase that so that they know the timings each day. What is an auspicious timing for this, 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 and this? Which day is inauspicious for this, 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 and this? And that would all be there. So, and then if you wanted to undertake something of great import, like for instance, getting your son married, then you'd have to see what is the auspicious time, muhurta, for doing that. Or if you wanted to start a business, then you'd have to see what is the auspicious time. You can consult the almanac, or in such an something of such import, then you would have to then you'd consult an astrologer to find out the best time. So you can see it's all quite complex. So when Pradyumna Prabhu proposed that we should calculate that specific to each place so that we get it right, Srila Prabhupada just rejected it. You know, these are devotees who really don't know very much at all. And Srila Prabhupada wants them to concentrate on learning about Krishna consciousness and to understand all this, what to calculate, how to calculate. It would have been a tremendous endeavor. So Srila Prabhupada rejected that. However, approximately in 1990, some devotees became aware of this, and then they made they started calculating location specific Vaishnava calendars. And actually nowadays it's not complicated to do. You have a computer program, that's all. The software is written. So and you can just type in and find out when is Ekadashi on such and such a day. Although there are three different Vaishnava calendars going on, and they don't always give the same day for different observances. So something's wrong there. So the question is put to me that, well, shouldn't we just keep things simple and just follow Srila Prabhupada and just follow the calendar that's put out by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Of course, in Bengali, but then once it's translated into English and then it can be translated into other languages, that's much easier, isn't it? It is easier, but it's also less accurate. And we may say, well, why don't we just follow Srila Prabhupada and not introduce anything new? My understanding of this is that Srila Prabhupada deliberately didn't give us many things because we were so neophyte and we were trying just to understand what is Krishna consciousness. And he didn't want to get us diverted into so many details of Vaishnava culture. There are many, many, many details in Vaishnava culture, and Srila Prabhupada gave it very simplified. After all, he was preaching and giving Krishna consciousness among people with no culture according to Vaishnava understanding, no culture whatsoever. Srila Prabhupada wrote in an early letter, it's 1965 or 1966, he wrote to an acquaintance in India that here people, after passing stool, emptying their stomach, they wipe the backside with paper. And then they don't take a bath. And then they just come out of the toilet and go on with their activities. They might not even wash their hands. Srila Prabhupada didn't give so much detail. But that was quite shocking to Srila Prabhupada. I know myself, I had absolutely no idea. It was a completely new idea to me when I was fortunately admitted into ISKCON, that after passing Dirgashank, which means passing stool, it's Sanskrit way of saying it, so Malatyag is another way of saying it. After passing stool, you should take a bath. I had no idea. No one in the West had any idea that you should bathe first thing in the morning after rising. Bathe? To take a bath, that's once a week at most. And take a bath means you sit in a tub of water for some time, which is also unclean. So we really had no idea of any culture. And Srila Prabhupada, he had so much, he wanted us to understand. He did give us so much. Vaishnava dress, putting on tilak, various mantras, deity worship. He gave us so much that it does seem quite complicated to the average Westerner, but actually there are many, many more things to follow. And my understanding is that Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to introduce Varnashram Dharma as the solid basis, the civilization that is favorable for practicing Krishna consciousness. And he said that 50% of my work is not done because this is still to be done. Now, if we're to introduce Varnashram society, it doesn't mean just calling some people Brahmanas, some Kshatriyas, some Vaishyas, and some Shudras. There's a whole big and quite complex culture to go with that. And we have to introduce that. When Srila Prabhupada said 50% of my work is not done, that's a lot if you consider what he did introduce. So it's a very big challenge, and unfortunately leadership in ISKCON has chosen to forget this largely. Practically in the whole GBC, all these years, His Holiness Shivaram Swami is the only one who's been promoting this or taking this seriously. But these are the kind of things that we'll have to introduce. Now, Srila Prabhupada said, don't introduce anything new. But he didn't say, don't introduce anything old. What is new and what is old? Everything that Srila Prabhupada gave to us was new. But actually one reason why the Indian people in the West at that time and even now appreciated that Krishna consciousness is this movement that Srila Prabhupada started, even though it was started largely among hippies, but they recognized it as being authentic, because it's old, it's the same old culture that's been followed since time immemorial in India. And when in 1977, I believe it was, there was a huge court case in New York against devotees for so-called brainwashing. But the judge in the case, Justice Leahy, I believe his name was, he ruled that Krishna consciousness is a bona fide religion with ancient roots in India. Why did he say that? Well, that was based on different scholars, and there are many scholars who they did tremendous service at that time. Joseph O'Connell in Canada, Thomas Hopkins, Harvey Cox, and there are others who Diana Eck. they stood up and said, no, this is genuine, in their terminology, Hindu religion. Why is that? Because the devotees were following an ancient culture. They could see this is an ancient religious practice. It's not something that someone has concocted, made up newly to cheat people, which could be said of various cults which were prominent in America at the time. And that the very fact that Srila Prabhupada gave authentic, strict following, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. This wasn't a formula to get large numbers of people in America. So they recognize that it's an ancient religion. And Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, although some people say, some scholars say that Krishna was introducing a new religion, that Krishna's, what he presented was a new religion in Bhagavad Gita, that it wasn't followed previously, what Krishna was stating. He stated some things which were new at the time. But Krishna says, yoga prokta puratanaha. I'm going to speak the old thing, which sakala neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. It's a very old thing, but it's become lost in due course of time, and I'm speaking it, this very old thing, I'm speaking to you. In the modern outlook, if something new, we think it's very good, or something new cure for cancer, or new surf, it's the same old surf, but new surf, new, improved. But in Vedic culture, old is considered better. It's considered that, actually that's a fact, because along with the creation, the Vedic knowledge is given. Krishna hoite chatur mukha, hoi Krishna sevan mukha. Krishna speaks the Vedic knowledge to Brahma. He infuses that within his heart at the time of creation, and then Brahma disseminates. So the actual full knowledge is there at the beginning, and then in course of time it becomes distorted, misunderstood, misinterpreted, and therefore from time to time Krishna comes, or he sends his representatives in the world to revive that culture. So this is my understanding. We have to introduce Vedic culture, which means introducing old things that might seem new to us. For devotees in the West, wearing dhotis and saris was something new. For people in India, it's the old culture. Now in India also, generally, men don't like to wear dhotis. Even Muslims used to wear them But now they all like to wear, and even saris, I think, that's also gradually going out of fashion. So this is the old culture. We have to reintroduce that. So, should we follow what Prabhupada said about the following the Chaitanya Mart calendar for calculation of the dates? I would say no. Now that we have a simple system to calculate it properly, then why should we stick to something which is inaccurate? Again, it's like if we insist on following Ekadashi on the day that it is in Mayapur, but it's not in the place that we are at. It's like saying that today is Tuesday when you're in Mayapur, but actually it's not Tuesday, it's Wednesday or Monday somewhere else. So that Srila Prabhupada said, don't do that. That was relative to the time and the place and the circumstance. But we should go back to the Vedic culture as far as possible. And that will require much intelligence to know what is to be instituted and what not to be instituted. I'll give another example. Sometimes we hear, especially from the elderly lady devotees in our movement, that when we first joined the movement, all the men and women, they used to dance together. And it was all mixed up. We were like brothers and sisters. And Srila Prabhupada, he didn't say anything about that. All right. But Srila Prabhupada, later that was instituted within ISKCON, and Srila Prabhupada didn't speak against that. One time I'd been in the West, and I was returning to India. I came via some countries in the Gulf, Persian Gulf or Arabic Gulf, where there are many Indian Hindus working, so I was at a program, and the devotees came into the program, and automatically, without anyone saying anything, the men sat on one side and the women sat on the other side. And I noted that. I said to all the devotees present, that now I understand I'm getting close to India, because automatically they do that. Whereas in the West, if I even say that, they get offended because they have the idea, why do you discriminate? Men and women are all mixed up together. It's a question of culture, that men and women, there's segregation. It's a very prominent part of Vedic culture and actually of any civilization all over the world. Any civilization stands strong as long as there are principles, and as soon as heathenism is introduced and there's no discrimination, man and woman, and everyone has free rights to do whatever you like, then the whole society breaks down. Here's an interesting saying I came across, that, how does it go now? Let me see if I can... strong men make strong societies. Strong society, you type this, right? Can you remember how it goes? Strong men make strong societies. Strong society. Here it goes. Bad times make strong men. Strong men make good times. Good times make weak men. Weak men make bad times. So you can see the cycle goes on like that. Say again, you can think about it. Bad times make strong men. When it's very difficult in the world just to get your food, then people become strong in their resolve, strong in character. They're willing to sacrifice for others. So bad times make strong men. Strong men make good times because they work hard together, they have principles, and then they make a society in which the problems maybe of insufficient food or law and order breakdown, they overcome that and they make a good society, they make good times. And then when everything's all very nice, then people start to enjoy themselves more and more. We don't need to follow all this austerity. Good times make weak men who no longer care for principles or sacrifice or dedication, and then weak men make bad times. That's the cycle, how society goes on. So Srila Prabhupada, when he first came to the West, he was most intelligent, being inspired by Krishna. He didn't try to do the impossible to change the whole society overnight. He writes about this in one purport, that you cannot change society overnight. He said in the Western countries, it's boys and girls mix freely. So Srila Prabhupada said that he made some concession to this, and he engaged both boys and girls as preachers, and the results are wonderful. But that doesn't mean that because Srila Prabhupada made concessions, for the very degraded situations that he was preaching in, that we should continue them forever. We have to institute segregation between the sexes, proper standards of behavior. Otherwise, sense gratification, especially illicit sex, ensues. So we shouldn't institute any new things, but we should institute old things. We should introduce old things. How can you introduce old things? Well, sounds contradictory, oxymoronic. There's some idea of how we can and should introduce old things. Otherwise, it could seem ridiculous. It's like insisting, today is Tuesday when it's Wednesday. So if you insist, today is Dvadashi, no, it's actually Ekadashi, but it's Dvadashi in Mayapur. It becomes like that. So there are some thoughts. Practically, it's become accepted throughout the ISKCON world that we follow the calculations which are done by computers. Even for Mayapur, they're probably more accurate than the Panjika, or the almanac, which is produced by the Chaitanya Math, which maybe nowadays they've also following the observations of the planet, the movements of the planets as they are. Otherwise, they were using outdated tables also. So even for Mayapur, calculations are more accurate. What I said, sometimes there are two Ekadashis, 2 days in a row. Or sometimes there's no Ekadashi. And then what do you do? Well, there are rules in Shastra for that. There are rules in Shastra. There's called Shuddha Ekadashi, in which you should fast. Ditta Ekadashi, although it's officially Ekadashi, you shouldn't fast on that day. It is all very complex. That's a fact. I've just spoken what little I know about it, but I don't know all the details. It's a technical science. It's a technical subject for specialists. So what should we do? Follow the scientifically calculated calendar. Science, we believe in science to some extent. To some extent, we can observe the movements of the planets and make calculations. That's been going on in India long before the Apollo moonshots. It's nothing new. The science is not rejected in Vedic culture. But it's Srila Prabhupada is against the misuse of science. Otherwise, science is not rejected. Hare Krishna.